Testing, testing, 1, 2, 3.
Good morning, Mr. Chief Justice. May it please the court, my name is Sean Conway and I represent the appellant Voodoo Molester. This is a murder case. The facts involve an incident that occurred on April 14, 2014 in Omaha at Gallagher Park, in which an individual named Tyler Williams was shot and killed. This incident was really a confrontation between two groups of people. Tyler and his group of friends went up to the park to fight an individual named Justice Terpstra and his family members and their group of friends. One of the central issues at trial was the credibility of the Terpstra witness, and that's because the foundation of the state's case was built upon the Terpstras who would testify that Adrian Lester came with them to the park that evening and was the individual that ultimately shot Tyler. Credibility was central to their testimony because there was no independent physical evidence linking Mr. Lester to the crime scene. There was no gun found. No one from Tyler's group of people ever identified Mr. Lester as human being there. So testimony came from the church. Ultimately, of course, Mr. Lester was convicted after a trial, and there are three main issues for appeal for today. And I'd like to take them in following order, if I may.
May I interrupt you?
Of course.
Ask a question. What was the evidence of the effect of the bullet and the board and so forth?
Justice Bill of Williams, I'm sure you're referring to the fact that when Mr. Lester was arrested, there was a box of ammunition found in the house that generally corresponded to the ammunition that was found in the crime scene. The testimony was also from the crime scene investigators and detectives involved that there was no fingerprint evidence on those bullets connecting to my client where they attempted to do so. The bullets were found in the common area of a home that he was sleeping in that wasn't really connected to where he was sleeping or nesting, but in a dining room area where other people actually lived there and were the owners of the home that wasn't Mr. Lester. So while there was, I believe that, yeah, it was Barrington and Winchester or something. I don't know if it was in a victim board. Perhaps it was the shell casing that was found in the scene.
Correct.
And that crime lab tech also testified that that kind of bullet was the most common type of ammunition that could find 9mm Remington or Winchester. The issues that I'd like to address with the court here today, the first is the Batson issue, whether the state struck the only African-American members of the jury pool based upon the race as opposed to a race-neutral reason. Second, whether the state committed prosecutorial misconduct during closing argument by inferring that the defense had the opportunity, perhaps even the responsibility, to independently test physical items for DNA comparison. And third, whether certain impeachment evidence that the defense wanted to offer against Justice Terpstra, which was one of the state's star witnesses in this case, should have been admitted at trial as opposed to being excluded. On the Batson issue, the reason that I raise this first is because just this week on Monday, the U.S. Supreme Court issued a ruling in Foster v. Chapp, which was a Batson case. And the court, in an opinion written by Chief Justice Roberts, they didn't change the Batson standard. But what the court did do is they paid particularly close attention to the race-neutral explanations that were given by the prosecutors. They took pains to really look at the record.
That's correct, and that's most likely the indicative of why they're doing the search of the case from the judge's case court. First place, in this case, they actually had the prosecutor's file that had been gotten during the close of conviction proceedings sometime earlier, and
the prosecutors had written things like black and super attractive jurors, which
even it
was explicitly evidence, but what the court did in its opinion was actually look at the record during during jury selection to determine whether or not there were race-neutral reasons given, and whether or not those race-neutral reasons that were given could have equally applied to non-black members of the jury. Because the court stated and reiterated a proposition of law, which I believe is very important for this case. If a prosecutor's proper reason for striking a black panelist applies just as well to an otherwise similar non-lawyer who is permitted to serve. That is evidence tending to prove purposeful discrimination. One of the individuals. Absolutely, and I think that that analysis by this court and reiterated by the U.S. Supreme Court this week applies particularly to this case. So there were three reasons given for striking one African-American black panelist that were really disputing here today. There was another who was stricken that were not disputing the reasons for that black panelist being stricken. Sure. The most important reason that the state gave for striking Mr. Shiloh, the most important reason that they gave, and they even said that, they said, more important than judge, what we're concerned with was that Mr. Shiloh worked with computer passwords, and he would therefore review the case very technically. That was the most important reason given by the prosecution for striking Mr. Shiloh. There were two other reasons. The two other reasons were that Mr. Shiloh appeared to have difficulty with speech and understanding. There's really no record that he had any difficulty with speech and understanding. I was there, I brought here, he had an accent. That was the extent of whatever perceived difficulty there was. The third was that when asked questions about what can memory be affected by during the war, he stated that a number of things can be affected by it. In fact, he stated forbidden. I asked, like, what? He said alcohol could be drugs, also could be vision. Those things had an impact. So those were the questions he was asked, and that's how he responded. He didn't even think that he had any. No. And at the record 514, 11 through 18, page 514, 11 through 18, the question was asked about, you know, what do you look at to determine the witness's credibility? He states, I'm going to look at probability, listen to what they have to say, but at the same time, memory could be affected by a lot of other things. I asked the question, I asked what? He states, alcohol, other drugs, also a different vision. Those things have an impact. That was how he responded to the question. Sure. So let's take the language that the state used, the most important reason he gave, that he might look at the case very technically. First, correct. Computer passwords was actually has a connection. What was stated was that he worked in software security for the University of Nebraska. But that language, very technical, they were concerned about a very technical job. I took the liberty of looking at the transcript this week in ways that you can talk to each other on the jury panel, on the prospective jury panel. There was a business analyst, two attorneys, a director of international service and new product development for Valmont, an electrical designer, a business intelligence officer for Mutual of Omaha, a president and CEO of Stonebridge First Financial Group, a market analyst for New Pacific Railway, a family doctor, a lab manager, someone who supervises a lab for a Methodist hospital, an employee of Pentagon Federal Credit Union, and finally, someone who works for the Med Center in software security. There is no question that any of those jobs could be considered very technical by a court. And while this court reviews for clear error whether or not the race-neutral justification provided by the state is sufficient, here, by looking at the record, there is little conclusion that can be drawn than that any of these explanations that were provided to the judge during voir dire could equally apply to other individuals on that jury. Meaning, of these, there were certainly some of them. I would have to review the record to indicate which ones. While not all of them were remained on. Sure, that's true, and I think that if the court did so in this case, the same conclusions could be drawn just because of the sheer number of individuals that were on that jury that had jobs that could have been defined as very technical in nature. So I think that the court could conduct the same analysis in this case. And the point is really this, that this is an equal protection issue. Batson isn't just a perfunctory issue that it comes up a lot in cases, but at a certain point in time, courts need to draw the line to say, the defendant is black. He's facing an otherwise all-white jury. If there's evidence that those black panels were excluded for reasons that applied equally to other members of the jury, we really need to take a hard look at why. And is that acceptable? Is that something that is such a
matter? In your proposition, the
I think that you could compare it either way. I think the probably the best comparison is who did the state strike versus who did not strike. And if those people ended up not being on the jury because of the defense strike, that's probably immaterial. But if the court would like, and if indeed you know, the opinions offer you, but if the test should be that it should be those who ended up on the jury, I welcome the court to compare that analysis.
Well, I think we're
all
trying to get that one.
Second issue, whether the state committed prosecutorial misconduct during closing argument. The state, during its closing argument, stated essentially that the defense had the opportunity to independently test items, physical items, items of evidence for DNA comparison.
Was there any objection to that line of questioning?
There was no objection to that line of questioning. But there was an objection made in the state's closing argument about their characterization of that evidence that was presented during trial. And in fact, and there's an indication in the record of this, that the state essentially points the defense table to say, we're not the only ones that can test items for DNA. The defense has the opportunity to test those items as well.
And was that the testimony that was used during trial?
During cross-examination, Detective Morris did testify to that aspect, essentially, yes.
And was there any objection raised at that point?
There was not. But
so you're saying that testimony was mischaracterized somehow during closing argument?
I think the characterization during closing argument was different than how the testimony was testified. Well, what the state essentially did was put the onus on the defense or shift the burden on the defense to say, hey, if they're so concerned about the fact that certain items, physical evidence weren't tested for DNA, they have just as much a right to test that stuff as we do. And that's essentially saying because they didn't test those items for DNA comparison, that must mean that they're afraid of what they're afraid of. And that's simply impossible. That's a shifting of the burden on the defense by the central argument. I do not, Your Honor. I know that this court, after Howland's brief was submitted in this case, the court came down with this ruling that Sleepy v. Swine, which was a reversal of the Court of Appeals on a prosecutorial misconduct issue.
Similar to the state argument, defendants sat here also in trials.
I would equate it to
That's correct.
In a similar way that in Doyle v. Ohio, the Supreme Court says that someone who invokes the right to remove signing, that evidence can't be presented before a jury.
At that time, in statements that safely, could you object to that statement that had been determined to test people as a specific instruction to the jury?
Just for clarification, are you talking about during trial or during the closing? You could, but it's also a matter of strategy during closing arguments. A defense is often weighing whether or not to object to something right away and hop up and down about something, which will then oftentimes serve to highlight what the issue is before the jury.
But if you don't, I'm not calling the jury's attention to something that they should be addressed.
Well, in this case, we did so. During the defendant's closing argument portion, we reiterated the fact that we spent a good deal of time talking about how the fact that items of physical evidence from testing for DNA by the defense is not evidence to be not sitting by them, but it's the state's burden, it's always the state's burden, essentially trying to cure the buzzword. I think it depends upon the circumstances. I think curative instructions serve their purpose in certain cases, and they don't serve their purpose in certain cases.
Did the state make any objections? Argued that to the jury after the objection of the individual?
No, they did not.
No, they did not. So you still have to make your argument to make your argument.
That is correct, but I would submit to the court that at that point the damage had already been done. At that point in time, they had already basically said as a representative of the state that they have the ability to do this, and they may even have the responsibility. Those weren't the words they used, but that was the implication. And oftentimes, that's all that's needed. And Justice Connolly, I know he's not here today, but in his dissent in State v. McSwain, talked about the importance of prosecutors during peace proceedings. That they're not just an ordinary public. That they're not just there to try to win the case, but to seek justice in every case. And I think that those comments during closing argument were antithetical to that proposition. That proposition moved from this That is correct. For the reasons, as I discussed previously, that do you seek to cure it, and which may serve to highlight something that otherwise wouldn't highlight. The third issue is the impeachment issue. Justice Terpstra was a star witness for the state who testified that Adrian Lester was the shooter in this case. However, facts at trial were that Justice Terpstra earlier in the day got into a text message battle with his girl named Allie Hart, who's a friend of Tyler's, and had bragged to another friend of Allie's named Jasmine that he could shoot Allie or bring a gun into her park. On cross-examination during his testimony, the question was asked whether or not he'd ever possessed a firearm before April 14th of 2014, and his answer was an unequivocal no. So then, during the defendant's case in chief, she sought to put Jasmine Crawford on the stand to testify not only about this conversation she had had with Justice Churchill earlier in the day and about his willingness to bring a gun to the park that night, but also.
Did the comment involve a gun or what was the nature of the comment?
With Jasmine, sure. Earlier in the day, on April 14th, I believe he said something to the effect of, when she was trying to convince him not to bring a gun to the park or to engage in that sort of fight, he said something to the effect of, I wouldn't hit a bitch, but I would shoot a bitch.
Okay. And that's the comment.
That's one of those comments, but there are others that were sort of in a string of him responding to her urging him not to bring a weapon.
Then that comment came in, and that comment was testified to.
That is correct.
And was admitted by Justice.
That is correct.
He admitted to how he made the comment.
He did. But then he denied ever possessing a firearm before that. Jasmine Crawford, as is indicated in the briefs, would have testified that he had earlier, about 2 months prior, had a conversation in class with Jasmine Crawford where he talked about possessing a firearm. That was impeachment evidence against a statement that he made that he had never possessed a firearm before April 14th. Now, the state wants to argue that, well, she didn't see him with a gun prior to April 14th. She just heard him talk about possessing a gun. Well, I would say that this goes to the weight of the testimony as opposed to its admissibility. We're not talking just about general impeachment evidence against a particular witness. We're talking about a star witness in the case, a case in which he is cooperating because he's hoping to avoid criminal prosecution. He is charged with his work or charged in connection with his next charge. Somebody else absolutely could have been the shooter. And this is the only individual that day talking about bringing a gun or shooting someone.
Do you think the admissibility of that evidence is governed by Rule 608?
I would concede, I think this is a 608 issue. And I would say that it's correct that extrinsic evidence shouldn't be admitted unless the witness has an opportunity to rebut that statement. Well, in this case, the witness would have had an opportunity to rebut that statement in rebuttal if the state chose to call. And they didn't because they didn't need to because the court never let the testimony in. If there are no further questions, I'd like to reserve my remaining time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yes, good morning to you.
Good morning.
This court, Mrs. Lewis, on behalf of the Appalachian State Nebraska, the defendant signed the errors on appeal, some first two, this trial, and the exclusion of Jasmine Crawford's testimony on the trial. The first issue, the denial of the motion on the trial, the claims that the district court should have granted his motion for trial, because the prosecutor's comments and the court's argument, having the ability to defend DNA testing, claims non prosecutor misconduct, maintaining non prosecutor misconduct, state's comments were accurate, and based on the evidence produced in the trial, which came in without objection. If the state had commented on the defendant testifying trial, The only thing, there was no inference to be drawn. The state said exactly what it meant. That it went into the issue. The basis for going into that was the defense injected the issue in cross-examination. They brought the issue up for the first time and asked the detective and asked about the fact that DNA testing was not done on every single item here. The state simply followed up on redirect and got the detective from West to indicate that, well, who can do DNA testing? Do we have to do it on everything, or why don't you do it on everything? Who can do it? He said, well, police can do it, prosecution can do it, defense can do it. So they're simply pointing out that to the extent that every single item wasn't tested, the defense was free to do it. I don't think that shifted the burden in any way, and I don't think it was equivalent in any way to a Doyle violation of your comment, the defendant's right not to testify or resign. So we would submit that there was nothing proper about the state's comments, and then you've been submitted that it's much of an actual prejudice by the state's comments in this case.
Am I correct in recalling that there was no objection by the defense to that question and answer that you just talked about? It was not an objection.
That's correct. The defense brought the issue up for the first time during cross-examination. The state came and addressed the issue on redirect, and there was no objection. I believe there was a foundational objection along the comments. As far as the second issue regarding the exclusion of Jasmine Crawford's testimony, Lester claims the district court should allow him to call Jasmine Crawford and impeach justice regarding his testimony about never having a gun in the past. We maintain this is properly excluded under Rule 613, which provides that prior inconsistent statement by a witness is not admissible as the witness afforded an opportunity to explain or deny the prior inconsistent statement, and the opposing party is also given an opportunity to address the issue. This is a foundational requirement in Rule 613. Lester did not comply with this requirement based on our review of the record. So we submit that Jasmine Crawford's testimony is properly excluded from Rule 613. In any event, we would additionally submit that exclusion of the testimony is harmless. If there are no further questions, we would ask to confirm that. As I understand it, the framework has not changed in light of Foster, in light of the case where they, as Stacey pointed out, they had the prosecution. Notes, the prosecution had specific race-specific reasons for excluding those jurors, including the extent they gave other reasons that were supposedly race-neutral, or described those as nonsense. That's not what we have here. Three reasons were given, I submit to each. Those three reasons was valid. Valid race, crucial reason. That's a show otherwise.
Should the comparison be made between the excluded individual and what? A whole year or a whole year?
I guess I don't see why you shouldn't consider all of it, but I probably considering in light of the long size ones of set. And I believe that's U.S. Supreme Court, U.S. Home Rule on this Foster. Some of the prosecution's reasons for excluding some people didn't carry the day with respect to other people who did sit.
Do you think the record is sufficient to go back and look at the other two sat and lay it up next to the reasons given by the prosecution in this case?
Well, not really, because I think on each of these three issues, or each of the reasons given by the prosecution, those things weren't really explored with the other jurors, so I don't know if we could really compare them and say those reasons wouldn't have been valid for anyone else. I mean, they very well may have. And as far as like the speech and understanding, I wasn't there, but the record doesn't dispel the state's assertions. But no, to answer your question, Your Honor, I don't think the record permits us to look at what here and say these reasons didn't carry the day off the bus with any other jurisdiction. It's necessarily bogus. I don't think that's the case here.
Was the juror questionnaire to my
I don't think so. I don't.
Did each of the prospective jurors identify their job duties, and discuss those things in the record?
As I recall, the parties did go through pretty much all the prospective jurors and asked them to discuss their application. With respect to a lot of the jurors, but I do know that.
Let me give you an hypothetical. I told you that juror, Mr. Strzok, he's got us.
I mean, you guys stuck with the facts in this case. There were more reasons given than just that. But if you had two people,
somebody else has the same accusation that was allowed on the jury, doesn't that become significant in the outcome of the instruction?
Yeah, I'm not arguing on that. I'm arguing that it wouldn't be.
Is there any direct instruction or legal instruction that the application on one juror was left on the panel was assuming for the jury?
Based on my recollection, the record, Your Honor, that there's no indication from anyone else that held a job anywhere near similar to that. And I think that the consideration about his job is valid. I mean, you have a lot of jurors in the state that sort of want the CSI presentation in the state. And if you have somebody who is going to be view the state's case higher than how you have in there, which is the state's concern, that is a valid consideration. So I don't think that there's anything bogus to the hopes. Thank you.
Thank you very much. You may have time to read off.
He has a minute, 18 seconds.
To pick up where we left off on the Batson issue, and to answer Justice Miller's question about whether we look at the potential community members or those who are actually permitted to serve and reviewing the law from possible checking on legal those who are actually permitted to serve. So they actually have to look at a jury that served. That is the comparison. That's correct.
And the records that we have and what's the right word? Merely
Yes, but the analysis done by the U.S. Supreme Court was about what happened on the court during jury selection. I think, as I was saying to Justice Stacey, the impetus of perhaps why they granted cert or the egregiousness of these things is that backstory. But here we have a voir dire in which we don't have sufficient race-neutral reasons. And Your Honor, I would have to look through the record to just verify which of those prospective jury manager for Methodist Hospital, someone who deals with the CSI effects and daily professional life that the state articulated, whether or not they were on the panel or not.
But my point is that the record that we have established the court that there are arguments.
Yeah, answer.
Thank you.
Yes, I think the record is sufficient. And if there is something missing from the record that does not support the race neutral explanation, then it's inference is that it is incorrect.
Thank you very much. Our next case of the day is State of Florida. Department of Insurance is a countrywide truck insurance. Judge Purtle will be reading the courts for this case.